as of 12:30, and some have just moved out of the St. Louis area, moving to the east and to a lesser extent north, where there had been severe thunderstorm warnings for a large part of the St. Louis metropolitan area earlier this morning and into early this afternoon. We will see continued showers and thunderstorms as a low-pressure system located over the Central Plains still spreads waves of rain across the Midwest today. The system will slowly track to the east, affecting the region through tonight, with several rounds of thunderstorms producing some areas of locally heavy rain, and flash flood watches have been in effect for parts of the Midwest. Severe storms are also possible this afternoon and evening across the mid-Mississippi and Ohio River valleys. The cold front will push through the Midwest tonight, and that will allow for a little quieter conditions to move in for the start of the holiday weekend. But until until Saturday, we're seeing lots of rain. Showers and thunderstorms in the Champaign-Urbana forecast for the rest of the day. Some of those storms may produce heavy rainfall. The high this afternoon around 60 degrees if we reach that high. Southeast winds at 10 to 15 miles an hour for the afternoon. Showers and thunderstorms continue through this evening. Then we'll have a chance for some residual showers after midnight, the low of around 52. Southwest winds tonight, 10 to 15 miles an hour. For tomorrow, no rain, but still mostly cloudy, and a high of 68. West winds at 15 to 20. The chance of showers and thunderstorms reappears tomorrow night with a low of 47. And the forecast for Easter Sunday has continued showers and thunderstorms likely, the high of around 63. 52 on Sunday night with more showers and thunderstorms. They'll continue through Monday and into Monday night. Chance of showers and thunderstorms through Tuesday, all the way through Wednesday night before we see sunshine reappear, not until Thursday. And high temperatures generally around normal, Tuesday in the low 70s, mid-60s by the end of next week. We're in the mid-40s to around 50, by and large, around east central Illinois. Thunderstorms at the top of the hour in most places. Pontiac had 45 degrees, and Lincoln had 46. Danville also 46 degrees. It was 48 in Rantoul, 52 in Taylorville, 50 in Springfield, 46 in Bloomington. Paris had 54, Mattoon 55. And in Decatur, it was 51. At Willard Airport at the top of the hour, heavy rain and 49 degrees, 93% humidity, dew point at 47. The winds were out of the east at 6 miles an hour, and the barometer was rising, actually, at 29.92. And on our studio's thermometer at Friends Plaza on the U of I campus, it was 48 degrees. It's 20 minutes before 1 o'clock. The Afternoon Magazine, Celeste Quinn is away. I'm Tom Rogers. This week, thousands of Illinois residents got reacquainted with their storm shelters during severe weather, whether it was in a basement, a hallway, or a community shelter. But residents of a mobile home park that's become a center of Champaign-Urbana's Hispanic community have no central place to go in an emergency. As Jose Diaz of the investigative reporting unit CU Citizen Access reports, residents of Shadowwood want the situation to change.
Every time the National Weather Service issues a storm warning, residents of Shadowwood must decide where to seek protection. The mobile home community in northern Champaign lacks a storm shelter. Heidi Zavaleta lives in Shadowwood. She stays home during storms even though it is not safe. However, many of her neighbors choose differently.
Many go to Carl or to the hospital. Others go to the mall or Walmart.
Because most of Shadowwood residents don't speak English, they don't hear about tornado warnings until the sirens go off. This leaves them little to no time to find a safe shelter. Many residents end up seeking shelter under the bridge of nearby Interstate 74. Mary Blue is office manager of Shadowwood. She says she has seen many of the residents climb up the bridge.
I've seen them once. I've seen all the cars. They pull over there and they just zip up there. And that's where they would sit. And as people come, more and more of them would huddle together right in that space.
Jose Rodriguez moved to Shadowwood in 2008. He says that he has never received any type of information from the city or the property about what to do during inclement weather. However, other residents told him where to go during storms.
We always drive to the mall because it's one of the closest places, and we've always gone there. We don't have another option.
The city of Champaign is aware of the current situation and created the Bristol Park Neighborhood Plan to address the issues of the area where Shadowwood is located. One of the long-term goals of the plan is to help develop a storm shelter near Shadowwood. But long-term goals could take up to 20 years to be completed. Greg Skax is community development specialist for the city of Champaign. He says the city is not planning on providing the money to build a shelter, but is willing to donate an empty property just south of Shadowwood.
We'd be willing to use our land, and then if another organization would come in and want to set up their operations as a storm shelter, and then they build their facility either on the same property or some adjoining properties, it could be a partnership that way.
Shadowwood's management and residents believe that the plan to create a storm shelter that could also serve as a community building is a step in the right direction. But until its completion, severe weather will still force the park's residents to scramble. I am Jose Diaz.
Jose's report is part of CU Citizen Access. It's a joint project of the University of Illinois College of Media, the News Gazette, WILL, and the Marriage and Stevick Foundation. It's devoted to coverage and discussion of social and economic issues within Champaign County. You can read more about the Shadowwood community and other stories at will.illinois.edu. It's Earth Day today, and the Cincinnati Zoo says it's set to become a leader in solar energy, as Sherry Lawson of member station WNKU reports.
Families come to the Cincinnati Zoo to view spring flowers and get a glimpse of the latest attraction.
Look at the baby giraffe's tongue.
It's the first giraffe born at the zoo in 26 years, but visitors may not notice another new addition.
We have a 1.6 megawatt solar canopy in our parking lot. 6,400 panels.
The zoo's Mark Fisher says this solar array will produce 20% of the power needed at the 60-acre facility.
From elephant houses to manatee filtration systems to the heat for the gorillas, I mean, everything needs power, and we are a large energy consumer.
Through a complex arrangement of tax credits and bank financing, the zoo has partnered with developer Steve Malink to build and operate the $11 million system. Malink insists that despite its startup costs, solar is profitable technology, even in the Midwest.
We have 1.5 times as much the solar resource as Germany, which is the largest market for solar in the world.
The Washington-based Solar Energy Industry Association says the amount of electricity produced by the solar industry doubled last year in the U.S. compared to 2009. Roan Resch is the association's president.
And we expect that by 2015, solar electricity will be the lowest cost option for retail electricity in all 50 states.
The Cincinnati Zoo can purchase the system in 7 years. For now, it will buy the power it produces at a reduced rate, giving it a hedge against increasing energy costs and helping with its mission of conservation and education. For NPR News, I'm Sherry Lawson in Cincinnati.
When a book sells millions of copies, it's a safe bet that a film version is on the way. Kenneth Turan has the latest review of the film Water for Elephants.
Water for Elephants gives off an air of self-satisfaction. It's got a bestseller as source material, a circus as its setting, and actors like Reese Witherspoon, Robert Pattinson, and Oscar-winning Christoph Waltz. But while the visual spectacle of a Depression-era circus is splendid, the romance that sold all those copies of the book is not there. Young Jacob Jankowski, played by Pattinson, had his life as a country vet all planned. But his luck turns bad, and the freight he hops turns out to be a circus train. Almost immediately, he finds himself confronted by August, the circus's dangerous, mercurial owner, played by Waltz.
You ride my train, you eat my food without my permission, while hard-working men labor all day for the same privileges. And these filthy roustabouts are my family. You are an intruder. Next stop, throw them off. Probably study poetry.
Study veterinary science, not poetry.
Veterinary sciences? What school?
Cornell.
You're a Cornell graduate?
Jacob ends up sticking around, and he can't help being drawn to August's wife, the beautiful platinum blonde Marlena, played by Witherspoon, who's the circus's star attraction. Before you know it, she's telling him her life story.
When I was 5, for an entire year, I pretended my mom was an Appaloosa mare. I did. And that I was a filly, and then I was just dreaming that I was a girl. And that one day I'd wake up and I'd run home. And then the circus came to town.
The romance of the carnival is strong in this film, and that's the element viewers will remember most. Fans of the Twilight series who are looking forward to seeing Robert Pattinson are not going to be pleased to hear this, but the film's weakest link is the romance. Water for Elephants offers a lot to look at, just not enough to feel.
Kenneth Turan is a film critic for NPR's Morning Edition and for the Los Angeles Times. After some 7 years of litigation, the three boys who felt they were cheated by Mark Zuckerberg out of a large Facebook fortune were told last week by an appeals court that they'd have to make do with a smaller Facebook fortune. Maybe. Travis McDade explains in this week's edition of Legal Issues in the News.
Real people portrayed in the Oscar-winning film The Social Network have spent the past year saying that while they thought the movie was great, it was pretty much a work of fiction, at least as far as the portrayal of them was concerned. That's almost certainly because most of the major characters don't come off terribly well. Much of the action in The Social Network is driven by the real-life lawsuit Tyler and Cameron Winklevoss, along with their partner Divya Narendra, filed against Mark Zuckerberg and Facebook. And while most of the movie's characters were shown to be overly privileged, entitled, scheming, thoughtless, selfish, drunk, and overly privileged, the Winklevoss twins come in here for special mention. All those things, plus wealthy, handsome, Olympians, and members of the Harvard crew, they are difficult to feel sorry for in any capacity, least of all one involving the justice system. In fact, there are only two ways they could be less sympathetic to the average American. One, if they told an interviewer they had tiger blood. Or two, if they claimed the $65 million settlement they eventually got from Facebook wasn't enough. So only someone bucking for a sequel could have guessed that the three boys, referred to collectively by the court as the Winklevosses, felt that the $65 million settlement they eventually got from Facebook wasn't enough. The Winklevosses, it turns out, thought they'd been had. Or, as Chief Judge Alex Kaczynski of the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals recently put it, they felt they'd been, quote, bested by a competitor and sought to gain through litigation what they were unable to achieve in the marketplace, unquote. The Winklevoss's federal claim was that in their negotiations, Facebook, a company that is not publicly traded, had kept from them the true value of its stock, and so they'd settled for about a quarter of what they would have settled for had they been more fully informed. This, they claimed, was in violation of an SEC regulation known as 10b-5. But the federal district court disagreed, as did, last week, the Ninth Circuit. Judge Kaczynski, writing for the court, said, quote, the Winklevosses are sophisticated parties who were locked in a contentious struggle over ownership rights in one of the world's fastest-growing companies. They engaged in discovery, which gave them access to a good deal of information about their opponents. They brought half a dozen lawyers to the mediation. Howard Winklevoss, father of Cameron and Tyler, former accounting professor at Wharton School of Business and an expert in valuation, also participated. A party seeking to rescind a settlement agreement